a document stating obligations on states, thereby changing completely its character as a statement of principles to serve as a common standard of achievement for the members of the United Nations. The Soviet proposal for deferring consideration of the declaration to the fourth session of the Assembly requires no comment. An identical text was rejected in Committee 3 by a vote of 6 in favor and 26 against. We are all agreed, I'm sure.
Is my audience that retarded? I mean, seriously, do you really think that that was Margaret Thatcher? Jesus Christ. It was Eleanor Roosevelt, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights speech. And, she was American, and her husband was the President of the United States. Geniuses. All right. Let's see here. My name is Madge. I'm a lesbian with food allergies. Oh, shit. I gotta get started here. I logged out of my Skype because everything was... Oh, God. I don't want any fucking software updates. Jesus fucking Christ. Just get me into my fucking Skype, you fucking douche. I have somebody I need to call who hopefully will be able to get through, and it'll be a nice surprise. Yeah. I have friends. My friend Bill Headhead talks like that. A lot of people still talk British when they're old money. I farted. Jesus Christ. Seriously, though. People act like you've never taken a history class. I mean, that's pretty scary. You know? No wonder history repeats itself. All right. Let's see here. Hold on a sec, cunt. Hold. Jesus Christ. Hold on a sec, cunt. I gotta get this going. I'm a little bit late. I'm double glassed here. See two different pair of glasses. I finished editing this wonderful... She was homeschooled, you know. I know some other scary people with no chins that were homeschooled. I think it works if I call you. Okay, I'm online. Okay. I'm online. And on air, please call. This is my special guest who you will recall. I've been trying to get on this Grum for a long time. Grum being short for program, and my vagina smells. Now, I do have things I would like to mention. You will note that once again I have changed my presidential endorsement. Go to my website and look. Or if you're on my website now looking at this program, then you can see for yourself right now. Just take a look over, take a glance over yonder, and you can see that my endorsement changed. Okay, let me see. Just want to make sure that's working. Okay. Work. All right. Now, let's see. Beryl Malding. Oh, I got an email from Beryl Malding. It seems that I've been mispronouncing her name. Okay. Let's see. Back to the matter at hand, Beryl Malding. What the fuck happened? This is all fucked. My mail is fucked. I had a reboot. I could only work whatever this program is from the wrong computer because it wasn't working on the main one. Anyway, I'm a lesbian. My name is Madge Weinstein. And wait a second. Hold on. I'm trying to call. He is trying to call. I don't see. Let's see. I'll try to call. Let's see here. This is maybe not the reason. Hello?
Yeah.
Max.
Hello.
Max, is this you? Hello.
Yeah.
Max, it's me, Madge Weinstein. Hello.
Hey, buddy.
I'm a woman. You needn't call me buddy. Hello? Hello?
How do I get rid of the latency?
Oh, am I latent? Well, I don't know. Should we call back? Oh, my God. We should turn... I see you on video. We should turn that off because that's going to slow it down, I think. Not that you don't look gorgeous. Because you can't... I can't put your video on my TV anyway, on my show. So, okay. Oh, I think he got offended. Hold on. Max sent me a very disturbing email about using the D word, which is depression. Let's see. How are you doing, Max? Are you able to hear me now without the echo? No.
Yeah, it's just to get the echo.
Yeah. Okay, so it says, I'm going to read this article you sent me, part of it anyway. This is from Reuters, and it just came from Tuesday, February 12th, yesterday. New York, fear that a hobbled banking sector may set off another Great Depression. Note, they said Great Depression. They did not say possible recession. Another Great Depression could force the U.S. government and Federal Reserve to take the unprecedented step of buying a broad range of assets, including stocks, according to one of the most bearish market analysts. I guess that means he goes to highway rest stops and sucks off straight men. The extreme scenario, which would aim to stave off deflation and stabilize the economy, is evolving as the base case for Bernard Connolly, global strategist at Bank AIG in London in the late 80s and 90s. Connolly, okay. Avoiding depression is unfortunately going to have to involve a large quasi-permanent increase in the budget deficit, preferably tax cuts, or restoring overvaluation of equity prices. And now I have Max here. Max is a Al Jazeera filmmaker. He makes films regularly for Al Jazeera English, the major television station. But we know him from before that, from Carmen Bank Radio, which he still produces with Stacey, though not as often, but just as enthusiastically. So what is going on with this, Max? Can you explain what this... Because I don't understand that. Why does tax cuts help a depression when you don't have any money? Oh, I guess... Yeah, will you explain this?
Sure, I'll try. Although okay. The echo effect is pretty bad.
Maybe if you just...
You can hear me okay on your side?
I hear you just fine, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you bring up a couple of things. First of all, the reason I sent you that is because we're seeing in the media now use of the word depression. So we're moving past use of the word recession because we're... well into a recession, and now we're getting into the possibility of a depression. And a depression is a severe economic contraction, and this is something that people on CNBC and other networks are not talking about. You mentioned before I go on that Stacey and I doing Karma Bank. I should mention that Stacey is the writer and director of our films for Al Jazeera English.
Right, that's true. I should have mentioned that.
She is the force. She is the power. She is... Today's our fifth anniversary.
Of what?
Of falling in love.
Oh, okay, good. I mean, I'm glad. Congratulations. I just wasn't sure if you were referring to that or Karma Bank.
We wanted to share that with you. You're
all right.
You know, well, you're all about love, Madge. You're a love.
I am full of love, and
I feel as though you're our preacher. You're our church.
I am putting on extra lipstick in honor of your love.
Thank you.
So
anyway, yeah. I mean, not that, as you point out, you're. Listeners are necessarily going to be tuned into this.
My listeners are retarded. They didn't even know that was Eleanor Roosevelt I was playing. I was playing the Universal Declaration of Human Rights before the show, and they thought it was Margaret Thatcher.
yeah, but he should be aware that the economy is now tiptoeing into a depression.
Okay. And what exactly does that mean? I mean, because I don't understand why that article says we should get more tax cuts. If it's a depression, doesn't the government need money to do things like what they did, like what FDR did in the 30s with the bridges and all this, or 40s rather?
The discussion of tax cuts or monetary policy is just noise. It's not germane to anything. The economy. The point is that the economy is now in the first stages of a depression.
Right.
And but I wanted to actually, if it's okay, something that we talked about for the last couple of years, this whole Coca-Cola boycott.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because I know Straight Chris has brought it up a few times, and in my mind, we were talking about it. I thought, well, hasn't it been successful to some degree? I mean, does it even matter anymore since the economy is at its knees? Wasn't that the point of the boycott, or am I misunderstanding?
Well, last year we had a setup with some money managers in the UK where if Coca-Cola stock had traded down to 22.5 based on a boycott, we would have sent money to people in India. So we
had to buy their groundwater back?
Yeah, it's groundwater and other issues. So we were poised, I think, to send about $250,000 had the stock traded down. But the stock didn't trade down, so we had another outcome. I ended up making about $50,000.
Oh, right. I see. Well, listen, I want you to know that I talked, you know, when you had given all this advice way back, I've been applying the advice in my own life. Now, I don't have a lot of money, but you did advise me to get out of debt. And I am happy to say that I will be completely out of debt as of April 1st. No, March 1st. March 1st. I paid off all my debts. Because before I talked to you, I used to think that since I have a low interest rate credit card, I might as well just pay off the interest on that and then continue to, operate business as usual. But instead, based on your advice, I paid off the debt. And now starting in March, I will have much, much smaller cost of living. Also, I've advised my family to invest in gold and to internationalize all of their investments and basically get the hell out of American investments. And they did that well over a year ago. So I'm very pleased that I was able to take this advice from you, and I hope a lot of other people did too. You see, I'm rubbing my breasts while I talk about this. It's kind of a turn on. If you can see.
Well, that. When you talk about gold, you start rubbing your breasts. That's natural.
No, it's because I was talking about you, actually, but okay, whatever.
Well, the gold story continues to be a good story.
Mm-hmm. And what's gold? What's the price of gold now, and where do you see it going?
900.
And you still think it's going to go to 2,000?
Absolutely.
Really? Wow. So we can all be rich on this program then, everybody.
Well, I think in the case of gold, it's less about becoming rich, and it's more about self-defense and preserving your worth, your whatever you have. Because the value of these fiat currencies like the U.S. dollar is going to go to zero. So you won't have the ability to buy gold at all, because at any price, because you'll have... There will be no means to buy gold. The value of your currency will be zero.
And this is because of this will be the result of this depression that they're starting to speak about, correct?
Yeah, you already see the monetary and banks, the authorities moving into place. The so-called war on terror is basically an excuse to build a rather large database, which will convert everyone's net worth into interest-bearing securities. So pretty much everyone becomes an indentured servant to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody has a positive net worth.
So when do you see this? How much time do we have, do you think, before our fiat currency turns to zero? Have any idea of the time frame?
Well, it's happening now. This is what gold is telling us.
Mm-hmm.
gold is telegraphing a collapse in the currency, the value in the currency.
Okay, but if gold is going up slowly, so it would appear that if it continues to go up at this rate, I mean, it's fast in terms of long term, but if it doubles in a year, then that means roughly, wouldn't that mean that our dollar will be worth half of what it is in a year, or no?
Gold was up over 35% last year. Gold's tripled since we first started talking about it.
Right, I know. So does it, but that. I'm just trying to figure out how much time we have, in your opinion. We who would like to divest. I mean, I don't have a lot of money just because I've been paying off the debt. Now that I've paid off the debt, and now I can start to invest in things like gold, and I just want to know, like, how much time I have. Do I need to, sell my hole?
It's a good question.
Buy gold with my juices? I don't know. Oh, look at this. Somebody on the chat room. Oh, my God. The chat room was stuck for like 10 minutes. I was wondering. Now I'm getting all these geniuses saying stuff, and I can't read all these responses. Anyway.
I see some of them. They look pretty good. Somebody is recommending the Canadian Mint or the Perth Mint, which is good.
Yeah.
Goldmoney.com is good.
Okay. What about locally? Like, where can you go locally to buy gold? Is there a particular bank, like in Chicago?
In a city like Chicago,
yeah,
I'm sure there are gold coin dealers you can go in there and buy gold.
So you're not paying a premium for the fact that it's a coin? It's just the same as buying bullion?
You are paying a premium, but that premium is going to be consistent as the price moves up.
Okay, I see. Sloppy Jess says, you should blot with tampons, more absorbent. Oh, she's referring to my lipstick. People that don't listen to you for a long time, I don't think they understand your strategy. I don't think that you really have... Max doesn't really offer advice for what the American economy does, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Max feels that it's too far gone, that all you can do is survive as an individual and watch the system blow up, which is what's happening now. Am I right?
I see a couple of comments. The latency issue has gotten even more pronounced.
We could just wrap it up because I was just glad to get you on the phone. But what maybe if instead of – so we don't have to worry about the – just say what you would like to say to our audience with respect to the various things. I'm particularly interested in what you have to say about our presidential race. And I don't necessarily mean your opinion on candidate. I don't imagine you have one. But in general, your perspective on the big picture of what's going on in America, particularly with respect to the presidential race.
Well, the presidential race is extremely interesting in terms of this race and who's going to win. But as once the new president's in the White House, is anyone is really going to be interested in the governing that has to take place? In other words, it's a race. It's like an award. It's like reality TV. It's exciting. It's popular culture. It's, but there's governing issues that no one's talking about those. There has to be some governance at some point. It can't just always be a pop culture race.
Do you think it matters who we elect in this election? Michael Carino asks.
Economically speaking, no.
And
the forces of unwinding that are be in the economy right now are...
I'm sorry, Max. I got another little lag there. The economic forces are the same, I think, is what you're saying. The economic forces that are the same because they're independent of the presidency, right? Is that what you were saying?
Maybe I'm going to log out and try to log into Ustream.
Okay.
I know.
But then, okay. The problem is I don't think he's going to be able to talk to us through Ustream. Oh, wait. Max tried once more. So he's just dropped me an email. Sorry about that. Okay. He gave me his cell number. Got to try this. Okay. Bear with me. I appreciate you bearing with me, audience, because I have a vagina, and it hurts and stings. I don't want to read it out loud, and Walter Cronkite could get it. Is Walter Cronkite still alive, by the way? And if Mark is still around, then we can talk to him after. If he's still around. Max?
Hello.
Hi, Max.
Hey, buddy.
Is this better?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, now you refer to me as buddy, but you know I'm a woman and a lesbian, and for some reason in our books of how to deal with sexism, we don't like to be called buddy because that implies that we have male genitalia.
Which I do. Hey, man, can't we all be buddies? Can't we all be friends? It's almost Valentine's Day. Let's all, you know, join hands and sing kumbaya.
How about come in ya?
I like it.
Okay, groovy. Somebody asked a question. Oh, God. What if everyone buys gold? God damn it, I can't control this fucking thing. What if everyone... Did you see that comment?
Yeah.
What if everyone buys gold, the value goes up?
Look, yeah, I mean, the comment was, what if everyone buys gold, then the scarcity value goes down and the price goes down. That, of course, is the complete opposite of the law of economics of supply and demand. Everyone is buying gold. That's why the price is going up. As more people buy gold, the price will continue to go up. And, you know, that's what we're seeing.
And, of course, the law of supply and demand is as supply goes up, demand goes down, right? Or is it, and supply goes down, demand goes up? Or what is it?
Well, in the case of gold, there's very little supply increase. The gold mining industry only increases supply by maybe 2 or 3% a year. The demand, however, is skyrocketing. The demand in China from newly enriched Chinese people, the demand in India, the demand all over the world from Russia. People are making lots of money. As the U.S. economy sinks, the rest of the world is actually making lots of money, and they're putting lots of money into gold, and the demand is quite strong. The supply is limited. See, that's what makes gold interesting, is that you cannot increase the supply of gold the way you can increase supply of dollars. You see, every time the U.S. needs more money, like they raise a debt ceiling to $9 trillion, or they're bailing out another bank, or the Federal Reserve is bailing out another industry, they just print more money. It's an inelastic supply. I'm sorry, it's an elastic supply. They just keep printing money. There's no end to it. And that's why the value of the people's currencies and the money in their pocket. If you live in Chicago and you go to the store and you buy a loaf of bread and you buy a cup of coffee, it takes more money to buy that loaf of bread and cup of coffee because the Federal Reserve keeps printing more of this money. They keep putting more into the system, which is debasing. So that's the other side of the demand and supply curve. If you increase the supply, like the government is doing with dollars, the value goes down. Whereas gold, the supply is limited, so the price keeps going up. And that's the dynamic that's driving this historic move of gold. And gold, even if it were to trade at the inflation-adjusted price, which is, I think, an easy price to get to, you're talking about $2,000 an ounce. That's just the beginning of it, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, then if there's speculative money moving into it, like Russia, for example, all the oligarchs in Russia who are making billions and hundreds of billions in the energy markets, they are now big buyers of gold and gold mining stocks. You know, that kind of action can drive the price really a lot higher. $2,000 is easy to get to. You know, if Google can go from $100 to $600 or $700 you know, a share, why can't gold from go to $1,000 to $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000?
Especially since it actually has an intrinsic value. And correct, and
it
as I understand
value.
It, gold is the only currency in all of history that is still retains value as you go from empire to empire. I mean, that aside from things like crown jewelry and things. Am I right?
Gold has maintained purchasing power for 5,000 years.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just think about it in the last couple hundred years, you know, the you can buy an ounce of gold, you know, could buy you a suit 200 years ago. An ounce of gold will buy you a suit today. You know, as the U.S. goes into hyperinflation and the cost of a suit might be $5,000 for a suit, an ounce of gold will buy you a suit as well. So it maintains purchasing power.
Michael,
people don't understand the United States as well. Yeah, go ahead.
Michael Carino asks, where does gold get in its intrinsic value? I would say, Michael, ask your wife or ask any woman. Ask me. You know,
go back and read. You know, it's funny. Go back and read Aristotle. Aristotle is one of the first Western, you know, writers to talk about the value of gold. And gold has intrinsic value as a currency primarily because it's limited supply. Plus it's portable, plus it's fungible. You can melt it down and create coins, create jewelry, and do things with it.
Spongible, I like that.
Yep, it's fungible. So it goes back, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it might be nice to go over some basic economic terms for those of us who maybe took economics, you know, 30 years ago and forgot. What's the difference between recession, depression, and inflation? Aren't depression or recession and inflation in some ways opposite? I think we should maybe touch on that.
Well, recession is a slowdown in the economy. So you had, well, the classic definition is, a recession is when your neighbor loses your job. A depression is when you lose your job.
Okay.
That's a shorthand, kind of a Wall Street humor. But, you know, a recession is economic slowdown. You have very slow or negative growth. So in the United States, back in the early 1990, you had a minor recession. The growth was down into the 0 to 1% level. The last major recession in the United States was as a result of the oil shock in the 1970s. And then, of course, going back in the 1930s, you had a depression. A depression is multiple years of negative growth, skyrocketing unemployment, and tremendous economic hardship. So this depression we're talking about now would be similar characteristics. Unemployment would double, triple, quadruple from where it is now. And you've got tremendous loss of purchasing power for the U.S. dollar, and you've got severe economic strain. And the reason I sent you that article from Reuters is because, you know, like a movie script. You know, when you go in the movies and you see in Act One you see a gun sitting on the table. You know, and there's a rule of movie writing: if you show a gun in Act One, you have to use it by Act Three. You know, it's this.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like this concept of foreboding. A foreboding. Now, what I'm saying is once people start talking about depression, you know, I think we can start to think about we're moving into this more and more usage of this word, because once the economy starts to show negative numbers for several quarters in a row, you really have to move beyond recession. Recession's not strong enough. Now, in terms of the word inflation is a very misunderstood word, because most people confuse the word inflation with consumer price inflation. So when you go to the store and you go and you buy groceries and the price is up, people say, oh my God, look, what about this inflation? That kind of inflation, consumer price inflation, is the result of the true definition of inflation, which is increase in the money supply. When the Federal Reserve, when the banking system in America, when they increase the money supply at a very rapid rate, as they're doing now, all of that money in the system ends up forcing prices at the grocery store higher, and it turns into price inflation. Now, what would stop this recession, by the way? If you ask me, what would stop this recession? Mm-hmm. What would stop this depression? How can America avert this crisis?
Yeah.
And the answer is quite simple. The policymakers in Washington would stop lowering interest rates. Stop lowering interest rates. And let the banks who made those bad bets over the past 5 years on home loans deal with the consequences of making bad bets. Let those banks that made bad bets go out of business and the economy suffer a slowdown, but the stage would be set for a recovery. But the government, unfortunately, is not going to do that. To bail out these bankers, to keep the bankers keeping their bonuses flowing, they're going to keep cutting interest rates. They're going to pour gasoline onto the fire of this economy that is contracting.
So the result of lowering interest rates means what? How does that make money for the bankers? Because doesn't that mean if the interest rates are lower, then people are less likely to put money in banks and more likely to spend it on iPods?
Well, their primary constituency are not people putting money into banks. Their primary constituency are deal makers doing deals. Uh-huh. And deal makers doing deals want low interest rates. So that's their primary constituency. The people who put money into banks, the savers, the workers, the pensioners, they end up getting screwed. They're the ones who are subsidizing the hedge funds, subsidizing the Wall Street bonuses.
Those people are being asked to preserve the lifestyle of the biggest hedge fund managers in the world and the private equity managers and the biggest bankers by having to forego monthly income. For example, you know, my mother, she lives on a fixed income because she's retired. Now in the last 6 months, that income has been cut in half. Why? Because the government feels it needs to bail out bankers, and it has turned its back on those people who are workers, savers, and who are living on a pension. And that's the real demarcation in the American society today. It's between speculators who want cheap money and lower rates, who control the banking system, and the workers and the pensioners and the savers who want higher interest rates because they work their whole life to get a decent retirement, who are working every day 9 to 5 for a decent wage. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the week, they get less because the government keeps printing money. It's a, you know, inflation is just another form of tax. So these people are being taxed vis-a-vis inflation. And that's the true conflict in America. It has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with ideology. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that the banking system has set up a dynamic where the speculators are at war with the workers and the savers. That's the true conflict. Everything else, as you point out in your show, Madge, all the pop culture, the distractions are there to keep people from looking at who really is doing what and who really needs to be accountable in this economy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what inflation is.
Okay, so you don't think it has, like, the problems in our economy is a direct result of American hegemony and sort of the damage we do overseas to other cultures, killing people and undermining foreign governments. You don't think that this is sort of an indirect result of that, because how else can other countries and governments force pressure on our, you know, to stop doing what we're doing other than to destroy our economy? You don't think that's a fact?
Right. That's two questions, okay?
Okay.
And if you take Iraq war, Afghanistan occupation, that's roughly $2 trillion cost. Now that cost, by the way, is off the balance sheet. It's not currently something that the federal government, they just handed in their budget for 2008, I guess it is. It's a $3 trillion budget. The cost of Iraq, by the way, which is $2 trillion, is not on that budget. The cost of all of America's adventurism around the world is kept off balance sheet. I just saw a great movie called Charlie Wilson's War with Hank.
The new movie. Tom Hanks, is that the one?
Yeah, Tom Hanks.
Okay.
Now, this war is about when America was interfering in the politics overseas. It started off as a $5 million off balance sheet item. It quickly became a $1 billion off balance sheet item that it was hidden from as an underground secret war, as hidden from the American public.
Right.
And you know, this is the problem, is that America's adventurism overseas and in meddling in these other countries. It would be one thing if it was transparent and they, at the end of the year, they said this is what it cost, this is what we think we gained. Mm-hmm. But it's not. It's kept completely off the balance sheet. So. Which means that the U.S. has to keep printing money to service that debt, and of course that means more money in the system, which debases the value of all the money in the system, and that's inflation, and
yeah.
That's why prices are going up. The people in America are paying for this war in Iraq every time they go to the grocery store, and they pay more for their daily food and energy. They pay every single day in the form of inflation because the value of the currency keeps going down because Washington refuses to be transparent in their accounting. So these administrators, the policies, the foreign policy, it's self-defeating in many ways because this money is never going to be. Where is this money going to come from? America has a negative savings rate. America has virtually zero manufacturing capacity. America is 70% of the economy is consumerism, and the consumers are consuming slave-made goods from China for the most part. Now, Chinese labor is actually moving up. So prices even at Walmart are moving up. When people listen to your show, when they go to Walmart, they're going to notice that in the last 6 months, prices are moving up at Walmart. That cheap stuff they used to get from, you know, China, actually the wages in China are moving up. So now, even though they shopped at Walmart, which facilitated the outsourcing of their job, you know, Americans were thinking, well, I lost my job, but I can still get cheap stuff at Walmart. Well, now Americans are facing the fact that they lost their job, and the stuff at Walmart's going up, and they can't afford even Walmart stuff anymore.
Hmm. And Hillary Clinton, wasn't she on the board of Walmart? Can't she do something about that, or did she quit that? When was she on the board of Walmart?
Hillary Clinton is a captured politician. Uh-huh. She's totally at the beck and call of the current situation. I don't consider her to be independent in any way. She's a continuation of the same forces, the same... There's nothing there. I mean, as far as Barack Obama goes, mm-hmm. he's certainly a fresh voice, and he's certainly an articulate fellow, and he certainly, he's a leader. He speaks like a leader. He's inspiring. But I think, who is it, the ex-governor of New York, Mario Cuomo, who said that you campaign with poetry and then you govern with prose. You see, he's a brilliant poet, no doubt, and he's probably going to win the presidency of the United States. Is he going to be able then to take on the forces of the banking industry to reform banking the way FDR had to do after the Depression?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first we're going to have the Depression, and that's coming. Now, it's going to take a few years. He might get blamed for it, and then you could end up blamed for the Depression that was in the pipeline before he became president.
Okay,
and then he could be blamed for it.
But how much control? Hasn't the Federal Reserve System changed since FDR? I mean, how much power does a president have to say? I mean, to say lower interest rates or stop lowering interest rates, rather. I mean, isn't the argument you're making is that the president doesn't really have very, very much control at all over economics? Is that what you're saying?
Well, the last president that challenged the central banking system was John F. Kennedy, mm-hmm. who had legislation in the pipeline to disband the Federal Reserve System, which would put the American economy in line with how it was outlined in the Constitution of the United States. In the Constitution of the United States, it states explicitly that an American will use currency only of gold and silver, and this served the American economy well. Then in 1913, it was the introduction of the Federal Reserve System, which is completely beneficial to the banks who make the loans to the U.S. to run their economy. JFK recognized that this was extremely unfair to the American people because of inflation, the resulting inflation. So he had in the pipeline a move to disband the Federal Reserve.
And so
he never got a chance to go down that path. The President of the United States, I believe, can at least initiate legislation that would disband the Federal Reserve system,
it's really a minor act of Congress, from what I understand, to do that.
The Congress and the President can disband the Federal Reserve System. And this would be by far the greatest, this would be the greatest thing that anyone living in the United States could hope for, uh-huh. In terms of their preserving their economy.
So who would, if the Federal Reserve System, I mean, were to be disbanded, I mean, who would control it? How did it work before?
Well, the currency, the Treasury issued currency, and it was non-interest bearing currency. The Treasury issued the money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Treasury issues the dollars and the pennies and the nickels and the quarters, and it doesn't charge Americans for that. They don't charge interest on that. The mm-hmm. Americans don't. Before the Federal Reserve, you didn't get a monthly. You didn't get a yearly charge I see.
So because it was our government, they didn't charge to basically store the money or to
print the money.
Oh,
that's right.
Interesting. Okay. Now,
so it's our government. So the government doesn't issues the money, and it doesn't charge the taxpayer any interest for that money. And of course, it costs something to maintain the system, but it's not any but it's a trivial amount compared to the system now. So they don't charge anything. The money is issued, and the money is collateralized by gold or something or silver or something that has a tangible value.
That's key, right? And now, if we were to disband the Federal Reserve, how would we get our gold standard back? I mean, is that even possible?
Well, I mean, this is because of the integration of the U.S. economy into the global economy. For the U.S. to secede from the U.S., from the global economy and go and become the sole gold-backed currency would be quite a quantum leap, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But if I think with some consensus from other trading partners, there could be intermediate steps that would divorce America from its dependence on this horribly corrupt Federal Reserve system that's bleeding America dry vis-a-vis inflation.
Mm-hmm.
There are steps to be taken. You know, you'd have to be. There are very creative people that America has very creative people, but they're unfortunately not able to come to the forefront because their ideas are challenging this horrible monopoly that we see in the banking system. Tell you, the one guy obviously in the presidential race who understands these issues is Ron Paul. Paul is a very he understands the issues. I mean, he has other views on other positions that are
retarded.
Whatever, but I'm saying his views on the banking system are completely inconsistent with returning the value of currency and dollar to America in a way that would give people a chance again. Because, you know, the problem is over the last, 10, 15, 20 years, this wealth and income gap, which has been skyrocketing, is the result of this unbelievably unfair distribution of reward that goes to the top 0.1% who are basically living in an American socialist world where they don't really take risks. The bottom 99.9% are taking all the risks. They're the ones who live in the capitalist world. Do you think the partners at the top banks on Wall Street are capitalists? They're not. They're socialists. They sit there with their buckets waiting for Ben Bernanke to turn on the money spigots. They fill their buckets for free. They're getting 14% a year in money. They increase the money supply by 14% a year. They just put it in their bucket, and then they invest it vis-a-vis some currency arbitrage. They'll make another 10, 15% of the money. The top bankers are making 20, 25% a year without taking any risk at all. And then that is supposed to trickle down to the overall economy. Of course, it doesn't. What does trickle down is the risk. So you see General Motors laying off now, huge layoff.
Yeah.
You see unemployment skyrocketing. You see inflation skyrocketing. It's all because of this corrupt Federal Reserve system. It's all based on the same thing.
You know, you actually sound more hopeful than I thought you would with respect to things like you mentioned that there are some possibilities, albeit not likely. Now, I was endorsing Obama, and I wanted to mention this today too, but I took him off. I no longer endorse anyone. My endorsement is for none of the above because of what happened yesterday in the Senate. Because here was this very important, bill, this FISA bill, and there was an amendment on the table that said, should we strip telecoms of their immunity for all this spying that they're doing on people? And Obama rightfully voted yes. Yes, we should strip immunity. He voted yes to that amendment. Well, that amendment failed. Then for some reason, the FISA bill, which was the end result of that, that passed too. And Obama actually abstained from voting on that. And that really, really bothered me. And of course, Hillary was absent. She was in El Paso. And her supporters are like, oh, she wasn't there, as if like she got a note from her mother. You know, like, people go back to vote all the fucking time if it's an important vote. If she was not there, it wasn't there. But that's another issue. But my point is, first of all, the guy is a he's a representative from Illinois. He's my representative. And he chose not to represent me on this extremely important issue related to my rights to privacy. And what does that say? Now, I understand this is a calculated thus and so. But that's the problem, not the solution. These calculated risks. And this is why I feel that neither Obama nor Hillary can beat McCain. Because McCain voted. McCain voted because he has principles. They're not principles I agree with. And I'm not even saying he really does have principles. But in this particular issue, he gives the appearance of having principles where the Democrats abstain. No opinion on this very, very important issue. And then it goes back to Ronald Reagan. And one of the things Ronald Reagan did was, as a leader, that was so incredibly amazing and inspires these little neo-Nazis today. And I saw this on C-SPAN when they had a meeting of these students of Hitler, whatever you call them, the children of Republicans or whatever. And they said, Ronald Reagan said, pick five things you believe in and stick with them. And you see, and I see Republicans doing that. They may pick dumbass things or fascist things like, you know, prayer in school and abortion or whatever, but they pick those ideals and they stick with them and they're not ashamed of them. I just don't see Democrats doing that. And I think that nobody in any election wins when you're unprincipled. That's my belief. Mm-hmm. So I don't want, and my psychiatrist says from his clinical experience, McCain is already senile. This could actually be worse than Bush. This could actually be worse to have another president who starts out with advanced Alzheimer's disease in the Oval Office. And he looks like a lizard.
Well, you mentioned Reagan. And Reagan came into office and started, he and Margaret Thatcher in the UK, started something which we now call neoliberalism, which is deregulation and privatization, which is allowing banks to forget all the laws that were passed in the 1930s after the crash and after the Depression, and to prime the system with all of the problems we're seeing today. And the reason why people have not really paid attention to this is because they have, for the most part, benefited. You know, all of the real estate speculators from the last 5 years who benefited from the easy money, all the dot-com entrepreneurs who benefited from the easy money, they became politically deaf because the money was flowing in. You also mentioned, you know, Nazism and the Nazi youth. You know, not to overwork this historical comparison, but if you go back to the 30s and 40s in Nazi Germany, the middle class in Germany was benefiting wildly from the rise of fascism in Germany because the fascist leaders were basically showering the middle classes with the money that they were effectively stealing from the oppressed minority. Now you go flash forward to the late 90s or the 2000s, and this middle class America has been benefiting in the form of cheaper rates, which gave them the wherewithal to speculate in the housing market until such time now as rates have bottomed out and they're starting to move up. Now these people who turn their back on politics, turn their back on civil rights, turn their back on their civic duty to defend the Constitution, to defend these people are going to find themselves, in an extremely precarious position. And it's just a matter of bribing, you know. So when you say which candidate or that candidate, I always return to the economics of the situation. Whether the telecom bill goes through or doesn't go through, what people are going to understand, and it's coming soon, very soon, is economic collapse. And then they're going to look for answers. But it'll be way too late. The system has, the U.S., the system, there's very little recourse for citizens anymore. They've been marginalized. The idea of a citizen, you know, the right to assemble has been cut out. The right to voice dissent has been cut out. All these basic rights that you know, it's amazing. I think the creation of the United States back in, you know, the 18th century was a unique coincidence of the right people at the right time with the right idea. And it was great for over 200 years. And then 2000 came along with a thrown election, and it's like an equally improbable event of the wrong person at the wrong time with the wrong agenda. And I think since that day, we're just talking about the collapse. I mean, these foreign wealth funds, Madge, these are people that have benefited from America's fiscal irresponsibility in Asia, in the Mideast. They're buying up billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of American infrastructure. You know, in 2 years' time, you'll be driving from Florida to New York. Every time you go through a toll booth, it's going to be owned by either an Asian or a Mideast government. Every time, you know, even Warren Buffett has said he thinks that Americans are going to be paying income tax to both America and China. So the U.S. it's a loss of sovereignty, which is a shame because it was a fantastic country.
So my whole thing, and so do you agree with me what I'm saying about this whole, I find it really, really, really offensive that, you know, both Hillary and Obama are invoking the name of Martin Luther King for civil rights, yet they won't give me, as a lesbian, civil rights. And they don't care about every single American having the right to not be spied on by not only the government, but private corporations. I mean, I find that ridiculously offensive. And I find also that the entire election is truly and literally a ruse. It's a distraction. I mean, you have these people that are fighting and making a big staged, like you say, reality show when they're fighting to show that they agree with each other. You know, here we had the telecom immunity bill. And what do? They fight in order to have the same opinion so that if Hillary and Obama have the same opinion on all the important issues, then their marketing machines can take over. And then it's just a matter of marketing and public relations. And I think that's the fight they want. I don't think they want an intellectual debate. I think they want a marketing debate. And I think that if we buy into that, as Americans, we're morons.
No, I agree with you. It's tragic. But how do you get somebody to recognize the importance of this issue during a period in history of unbelievably cheap money with house flippers, where people who had zero income and no assets were given $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 to speculate in the housing market. Look at the situation in the last week. Bush is sending out every American a check for $600 or $1,000 or $2,000.
Yeah, along with Congress. Congress was happy to do that, by the way.
But you understand that money where it's there's no money to give out. He simply. That all that money is doing is it's causing more inflation.
It's like going to Rent-A-Center and taking a 20% interest loan so you can buy a black lacquer lamp with a matching couch.
It's increasing the problem. It's making the problem much worse. The problem is not that people don't have enough money to spend. The problem is that the government has been printing money without any checks or balances or it's hyperinflation.
Listen, Max, I have to end the show because I'm taping it for public access now and the tape's about to end. And lastly, I would like to close with something. I have this wonderful listener. Her name is Margaret Tarded. And she said, I got to find it, but she said basically the trick, no, wait, where is it, Margaret? She says, no, that's not it, Margaret Tarded. She said something about trickle-down economics. Oh, yeah, trickle-down economics. My boobs trickle down to my knees. And I think that's a good way to sum up trickle-down economics. Mine did, too, but I prop them up because they're fake because I had a double mastectomy. Anyway, Max, this has been wonderful to have you back on the show. It's so wonderful. You're a celebrity. Well, I hear Stacy laughing. Max. Don't laugh, Stacy. Don't laugh.
Okay,
Max. I'm easily impressed, sure, but it's true.
Hmm. Well, thanks. It was nice to join you again.
Yes, and please come back anytime. Just drop me a line like you did today. And I think tomorrow I'm going to have Bicycle Mark on because I know he wants to talk about all the shitty things that are going on as well.
Well, Bicycle Mark, apparently, he doesn't like gold.
Well, yes, and I'd like to talk about that as well, but I don't think we have room for that today. And I didn't
really All right, well, maybe we'll do it another day.
Yes, yes, okay. Well, thank you very much, Max. And tell Stacy hello for me. Give her a kiss. And happy anniversary.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay. Bye. Called me buddy. And thank you, Margaret Retarded, for that wonderful closing comment. And, my tape is ending, so I'm going to say goodbye to the tape. Goodbye, tape. Goodbye, public access, or whoever the fuck has eventually been conned into watching this tape, if anyone. I don't fucking know. So, Mark... Let's go on tomorrow. I mean, it would be ridiculous to start talking about this now because the show's already gone an hour. Plus, I have to masturbate my giant. My brother-in-law has to come to pick up the car keys that I forgot to leave in the house. Yeah, the tape ended perfect. And I need to masturbate the old giner. So I'm happy, though, that today's show, we got up into the 60s in terms of a live audience. That's a new high for this program. And I'm pleased that the audience is going up. And I assume that people are telling their friends to watch this program, and I appreciate that because for me, this is a good thing. This is the future because audio is dead. Nobody cares. Audio requires too much thinking, right? So if people get to watch this lesbian play with my areolas, and then that'll force them to listen to my... I'm not making any goddamn sense. I think I'm going over. Let me find a song to end with, because that was stupid as fuck. I'll just end. I need a Zichy song. No, I'm sorry, Mr. Zichy. I don't have any cued, and I don't want to look for it right now. So we'll just end with the good old lesbian song, and thank you once again for listening. Oh, by the way, I did spin class yesterday, and I did really well. I hadn't done spin for a year and a half since I went to the class that was taught by the lead singer of the Venga Boys. True story. But it was fine. Yeah, it was a big old dyke. And she said, how are you guys doing in the back? And I go, huh, huh, huh. She was severely lesbian out. Oh, wrong tape. Oops.
I heard Cheryl and Mary say there are two kinds of people in the world today. One or the other. Must be the men are them, the women are we. They agree it's a pleasure to be a lesbian. Lesbian, lesbian romance land. Lesbian, lesbian. Any woman can be a lesbian. Of mankind, but then she's inclined to be ahead of her time, and she's a lesbian.
Get out of that giant.
To pacify the people, for they won't defend a woman who's indifferent to men. No, she's my friend, she's a lesbian, and a woman's anger on the weeds explains a million second places in the master's games. Oh, it's real as a mountain, it's strong as the sea. Besides, an angry woman is a beauty. She's a chosen to be sacrificed, and she's a lesbian.
Lesbian, lesbian, no man's land. Lesbian.
I'm sorry, this song is too fucking long.
So the sexes do battle.
I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Get fucked.
The bosom where my journey ends, where there's no penis between us, friends.